This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Welcome to Owen Driven, Joy 94.9's multicultural program. The Orange Ribbon is a symbol used across Australia to represent multiculturalism, anti-racism and international understanding. We have hit the 21st century. You can contact us in lots of ways. SMS 0427JOY949. Email on air at joy.org.au. On Facebook, search for Orange Ribbon on Joy949 and Twitter, Orange Ribbon 949.
Today, we're talking with Hugh, who's normally one of our presenters, but today we've moved him into the guest seat to talk to him about his recent 6 months of living in India. So, Hugh, welcome home.
Thank you.
And I just wanted to get started here at the beginning to ask you just the basics. Why were you in India? Why there, not some other country? What was the best part of your journey? So just a short introduction to the
Best part of the journey was probably meeting someone within 1 week of getting there.
Isn't that cute? I'm sure we're going to hear more details about that.
But traveling around India was fantastic. I really, really enjoyed it.
And why India?
Because I know people there, and okay. I knew somebody who was going there. So I decided to go along for the trip. And I had started in Mumbai, went to Rajasthan, Delhi, and stayed in Gurgaon, which is just outside Delhi.
Okay.
So got around a little bit, and as I say, met somebody there as well, so that made it a lot more interesting. And wanted to stay there, but had to come back.
All right. Well, we're going to continue chatting with you, and this is Barb, and of course, we've got Leo here as part of the Orange Ribbon team. And, like, I'm just sort of curious. You knew somebody in India, but most of us just can't take off and spend 6 months traveling around someplace we really want to go where we have some friends. How do you negotiate that?
Well, I'm a bit crazy. And I just decided that I've got to a point in my life that I just wanted to do something like this and decided, okay, let's go. So I did.
Okay, and is this the first time you've done something crazy?
No, it's the second time.
Okay. Is the first one the one that brought you here to Australia?
No.
Okay. But so this does not foreshadow a permanent removal to India?
I don't know. It might.
Oh.
Who knows what's going to happen?
More things you're going to have to
if
stay tuned.
If India doesn't come to Australia, Australia maybe have to go to India.
All righty. Well, we have plenty to talk about with you. And again, if you want to ask us questions, Leo has reminded us at all sorts of ways to contact us. 0427-JOY-949, 1-300-JOY-949, onair at joy.org.au, Twitter, Facebook. There's all sorts of ways. So stay tuned and we will be right back.
Joy 94.9. More diversity over the weekends than any other radio station.
And you are on Orange Ribbon with Barb, Hugh, and Leo. And Hugh actually is in the guest chair today because we're talking to him about his journey through India, where he spent 6 months at the end of last year and the start of this year. So, Hugh, let's get jumped right into this stuff. Why that song?
Well, in India, all the clubs or parties, as they're called, you go to, that was very, very popular. And it was played and played and played.
And played.
I quite like it as well. Jennifer Lopez on the floor. So I thought I'll bring it along today and play it.
Memories
of India.
Beautiful, yeah. Beautiful. So I'm going to start with Mumbai, which is where you started your journey. And Mumbai, and basically all of India, has this rich history that combines colonial and local features. And did you experience this lovely combination?
I did, actually. I think the first day in Mumbai, I went for a walk on my own, and I came across this hill, you know, and I thought, I'll go up this way and see what's up here. And at the top of this hill was this magnificent old church. It was huge. I don't know if it went back to the British or the Portuguese or whatever, but it was a Catholic church, so it could have been Portuguese.
Yeah, it seems more likely.
Took me ages to get into it because it was all fenced off, so I had to climb through fences, walk over fields, and eventually I managed to find the entrance to this old church. And there was about 100 little school children all attending something in the church grounds.
Did they also have to climb the fence to get there?
No, just me. Yeah. I just went the wrong way. And I went into this church, and it was absolutely magnificent. It was, I was sitting in this church, and it, a piece of history, but very rich. And you could see the gold and everything else in there. And then when you walk out of that church and see the poverty, it makes you think.
Yeah.
You know? I'll tell you a story, actually. I went to Midnight Mass in Mumbai because I got there just before Christmas. And we went to this church, and the rule was you had to have a collar and tie and a jacket.
No matter how hot it is?
No matter how hot. And one of the reasons being, if you can't afford a collar and tie and a jacket, you can't go to church. Which I was disgusted with.
As you know, you would be.
To me, the Catholic Church is for everyone. And even in Goa, I came across that as well. I went to a church service. Mm-hmm. I'm not that churchy, but everybody kept inviting me. And again, it was outside on the grounds of the church. And again, there was a dress code.
Mm-hmm.
And for a church to have a dress code, I thought, it's not good.
Yeah, yeah. And what is that? What drew you up to the top of the hill? Was it just sort of a feeling or?
It's a good question, actually. I don't know. I was just walking around because I'd been in Mumbai once, but I hadn't been in this area. I was in Bandra and staying in a friend's apartment. So I thought, I'll have a walk around here. And I just stumbled across this church. And it was really nice, though. It was beautiful. And they had all these little kiosks outside selling all these holy things and everything.
It sort of bridges the past and the present with the Indian school children there.
Yes.
And then, you know, some of the oldest colonial architecture in the world
That's right.
Did you feel quite safe walking in India, along the streets and in the bush? And
yes.
Yeah?
Yes. And I never even thought about it because the Indian people generally are very, very nice. They're more likely to come up and shake your hand and say hello than do anything bad to you. I'm not saying there's no bad in India, but and came across it only once, I think. And that's a story in itself. But in Mumbai, I felt safe. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel like I had to watch what I was doing.
Yeah.
I even got an auto rickshaw one night. It was about 11 o'clock at night on my own. And it was a half hour's travel to get to where I was going. And it broke down halfway. And even then, I still didn't. And it was in the middle of nowhere. Even then, I still didn't feel, oh my God, what's going to happen here? Because all that happened was the rickshaw driver got another rickshaw and told the next one where I was going. And that was it, you know. And it was fine. I never ever thought, in all the places I went in India, I never felt unsafe.
That's a real like boon for Indian tourism, everybody out there.
Yes.
Mumbai is also known as a bit of a bureaucratic nightmare. It kind of makes our tram ticket inspectors look almost friendly. Did you have any run-ins with this bureaucracy?
Yeah, in Mumbai we did. Two of us went to this new mall. It just opened not too long ago. And like all the malls in India, there's no smoking.
Okay, well, good on them.
But like all the malls in India, there's no rubbish bins, there's nowhere to put your rubbish, nothing. And after we'd left the mall and we're on the street, I dropped a piece of litter. Now, it's something I don't normally do. In Melbourne, I wouldn't do it, but there's nowhere else to put it. And the streets are full of litter.
Mm-hmm. So you're not the first.
No. And the person I was with did the same thing.
An Indian accompaniment.
Yeah. And out of nowhere, these two young guys with their official badge on came out.
Oh, no.
And told us we were getting fined for dropping litter. Now, I just started laughing. You know, I looked around and saw all this rubbish everywhere. And I laughed, and that made him worse.
Oh.
And the person I was with argued with him.
Which probably also
made
it worse.
Which made him even worse again. And their fine was 200 rupees.
And that is in our currency?
It's not even $2.
Okay. It's so less you could afford it.
Yes, yes. And but after a very long argument with this young guy, I said, oh, let's just pay this 400 rupees, please. And we gave him the 400 rupees. And funny enough, he only gave us one receipt for 200 rupees. Now, this happens in India. And I said...
So he had a tip on top of that.
Well, I said to him, this is only 200 rupees. Where's the other receipt? So he quickly wrote out the other receipt because he thought, oh, I've been caught.
Yeah.
But then we gave him a 100 rupee tip.
Just because?
Just because we were being nice.
Yeah. You know?
And these people don't have much, you know, so 100 rupees is nothing to us.
Yeah.
To them, it's a lot.
Yeah.
It could mean the next meal. So.
Yep. And it is, you know, those kind of bureaucratic things to us do feel a bit like arbitrary and nasty. And yet it does keep hundreds, if not thousands of people employed.
That's right.
Doing and something.
That's the thing in India as well. And a couple of people pointed it out to me because you've got people who come in and clean for you and cook for you and do everything for you. And I didn't really particularly like having people in the house all the time.
Yep.
But it was pointed out, but you're keeping that person employed.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got a job, they're getting money at the end of each month. And it's not much, you know, they get paid. So, and we can afford it, so we should pay it and keep them there. So that's what we did.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. And is there sort of class differences between the kind of people who would be cleaning up the litter that you and your friend dropped and the kind of people who came along and then fined you for having dropped it? Did you know? Would you privy to that kind of information?
I would imagine there is.
Yeah.
Like an inspector, a rubbish inspector, I suppose he's called.
Yep.
wouldn't take a job cleaning the streets.
Yep.
And I'll tell you a funny thing. The person, the person's apartment I was staying in, he had a boy who lived in the apartment. And
is that as sexual as it sounds?
No. He was what you want. He cleaned the apartment.
Yep.
He ironed, he cooked, he did all this sort of stuff. Because he came from a village quite far away, he actually slept in the apartment as well. He slept on the kitchen floor actually.
Aww.
On a mat. But he was very happy, I was told, to do that. He got paid something like, I think he got paid 5,000 rupees. I don't know how much that is, but...
Not very much.
But he refused to clean the bathroom.
Oh.
Because he was above cleaning bathrooms.
Yep.
So an old lady came in every day, and all she did was clean the bathroom.
Yep.
I don't know what they're called and all the different names that they have, but that's sort of the status, you know.
Yep.
He cleaned the flat, he did everything, ironed, washed, did everything, but bathrooms was out.
Mm. That is fascinating, isn't it? Because, you read about the caste system and you read about these occupational roles that people are born into, but you actually got to see it live.
Yes, we did. And it's interesting. It's very interesting. And understanding the different roles and everything, it's fascinating. It's a fascinating country.
Yep. Are we going to hear for another song here?
We are. This is another song that was very popular in India when I was there.
Weekend, only on Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Joy 94.9 Orange Ribbon with our special guest, Hugh. Now, if you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, you can do so. Email onair@joy.org.au, SMS 0427569949, or you can like us on Facebook. Just search for Orange Ribbon 949, and you can tweet us on Twitter. Just search for Orange Ribbon 949.
Is there any way they can't get in touch with us?
No.
No. Carrier pigeon, come knock on the window here in the studio.
Yeah, come into the studio and say hello.
We have had a listener text in. In fact, Tex texted in, and he says that we sound like we're having a happy show, and indeed we are. So thank you, Tex, for your message, and I hope you're enjoying it as well. And I'm going to continue on with Hugh's story here, because from Mumbai, he continued his travels. He didn't just stay put. No, sorry, our Hugh was on the move, and he went next to Goa. And you seem to have spent quite a long time in Goa. What was the rhythm of Indian life there? Did you get into it, or were you an outsider observing it?
I suppose I got into it because I was there for 6 weeks.
Yep.
So it's very difficult not to get involved with life there.
Mm-hmm.
Where I was actually staying was a small village.
Oh, okay.
And there was a lot of, obviously, Indians there. But there was
As you do.
Yes. One thing about Goa, though, it's not like the rest of India.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really feel you're on the mainland of India.
Yep.
You feel like an island somewhere in the middle of a sea or something.
It was the last piece that was freed from colonialism, wasn't it? Didn't the Portuguese hold on until like the 70s or something?
Yes, that's right. It was very late. And they have an old fort at the top of this hill near the beach in Goa where you can go and visit. I went once. And I was exhausted getting there, so I thought, I'm not going there again. But life in Goa, I mean, for Indians, I suppose it's similar to the rest of India. You have the poor Indians, you have the rich Indians. Where I was staying, there was a lot of, I suppose, there would be hippies in the 60s, 70s, Italians and French, some English, and it looks like they've gone there but never gone away.
Okay.
And enjoy smoking.
Things.
The thing that annoyed me was when you went to a restaurant though, and you were sitting having dinner, they were still smoking things and all this smoke's wafting through your hair and everything.
Yeah.
You know? And
so there's no non-smoking in the restaurants?
Oh, there is.
There is, but
there's signs everywhere. It says no smoking. But so all of a sudden, they're puffing away.
If you were to say, would you mind, or they would probably just
they would say, there's the door.
Right, okay.
You know, when the whole restaurant's smoking and you're not, I mean, you can't exactly say, I object to this.
Yeah. Is that the locals as well as the local whites who've been there forever, as well as the local Indians who are doing this?
No. I never saw any Indians smoking like that or I never saw any Indians in the restaurant.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's very touristy Goa, and there's a lot of Russians there.
Okay.
Lots and lots.
Something you wouldn't expect.
There's a direct flight from Moscow to Goa, it seems, and it's one of their main holiday destinations.
Who knew?
So when you go on the beach, it's just full of Russians, a little bit of English, one or two Australians, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So for Russians, why Goa? It seems like a bizarre place to go. It's a long way to go.
Yeah, I really don't know, actually. They actually have a bit of a problem. They had the Russian mafia. I don't know if they're still there, but I was told there was a bit of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, I'm not saying that against the Russian people. They're very nice people. But there was a bit of trouble there. The Indians themselves they're just village people who get on with their life and make a bit of money from the tourists, taxi drivers and little shops and everything else.
Is it the bulk of the economy?
In Goa, I would say so. Yeah. I would say the tourists, you know, spend in the shops and the taxi drivers, you know, make their money that way as well. Because the season there is quite small.
Okay.
Because this time of year, they've got monsoon.
Yeah.
So I was there in April. I went back for another week after my 6 weeks, and I went back for my birthday. And there were actually, on the beaches, you have, the restaurants are called shacks. And they're built like shacks, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And they were actually taking down all the shacks.
Oh, because of the monsoons.
Because it was the end of the season, and it was getting very windy and getting very humid. Once you went away from the sea, you know, you were just soaked with perspiration. So they've got to make their money while they can.
So Goa is a tourist place.
Yes.
What do they make for the tourists? Is there local things that they sell or the tourists seem to buy? Or you go see one tourist, you have like everything on or they have...
Well, they have all... Obviously, they've got all these different towns in Goa. Depending on what town you go to, if you go to one town, for example, it's full of English tourists, and it's just, you know, one shop after another, after another, after another, and pubs and bars and nightclubs and restaurants. And then if you go to another town, it might just be Indians out there, because you get a lot of South Indian tourists in Goa as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the nightlife, I wouldn't say it's great, but you do have in the towns little clubs and discos and whatnot, you know.
What do Indian people like to drink?
Whiskey.
Whiskey?
Mm. Yeah. They drink a lot of whiskey.
So not much wine or anything like that?
Wine is very expensive in India. Goa is actually cheap for alcohol because they don't have as much tax in Goa as the rest of India. But even in Goa, wine is expensive.
Mm.
So a bottle of, for example, a bottle of vodka will cost you about $8. And a bottle of wine, a $7 bottle of wine from Australia will cost you maybe $17, $18.
Mm-hmm.
So get a drink.
And who wants to drink a $7 bottle of wine, frankly?
Yeah, exactly. And it's so expensive. So I would say most people drink spirits. Whiskey, vodka, gin, mm-hmm. you know, because it's cheap. Even in Delhi, I think it was about $10 for a bottle. But wine is expensive.
So if you were in like a nightclub or a restaurant, how much would a whiskey and something cost you?
Well, it really depends
on where you
on where you go and if it's 3-star, 5-star or whatever. But generally, it's not that expensive. It is for the Indian people.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously their salaries match the living in India and what things cost. But for us, when we go there, it's still cheap. Even a 5-star hotel will still be slightly cheaper. You know, similar to Melbourne, but slightly cheaper.
I'm curious as to, you seem to have sort of occupied a middle ground between tourists who just fly in, fly out, and the Indians who live their whole lives there. You were there for a bit longer than that, and you settled into the life a bit. And how does that work for a white guy?
Very well, actually.
Yeah?
And I suppose for me it was a little bit different because I was staying in a friend's apartment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you weren't in a hotel.
No.
You were living.
I had a 2-bedroom apartment to myself.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from maybe 10 days, I had it to myself for the 6 weeks. And I had a lady who came in and cleaned and did some cooking every day, 7 days a week. And I had a hire car that came with a driver who was totally mental, but it came with him. And I lived in this complex who had guards on the gate. It wasn't finished, so there was still a lot of workers there, and they actually slept in one of the apartments at night. And we had cleaners who came in and cleaned the grounds, and one of them brought her little boy who was 5, who delivered my paper from the gate up to my apartment every day, and I gave him 10 rupees. So I fitted in fairly well,
yep,
and got used to life in Goa. Mm-hmm. And the
would
area
that be
in
the life of a wealthy Indian, the life you were leading?
Yes. Two other apartments were finished in this complex. It was 70 apartments, and there was me. But two other apartments were finished, and two families moved in for about 2 or 3 days, then went away again, and they were Indian.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of wealthy Indians who can afford to buy second, third, fourth houses.
Yep.
And Mumbai is only 1 hour away from Goa, flying time.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people from Mumbai go to Goa on holiday. And you will see in hotels, I stayed in a hotel in April for a week, and it was mostly Indians that were in the hotel and wealthy Indians. So there is money in India. Not everyone is poor.
Certainly. No. They've got the largest middle-class population in the world, a middle-class population that exceeds the entire population of the United States.
There you go.
So did you – I noticed from some of the notes you gave me that – and you've mentioned that you spent most of your time in Goa by yourself, but you did have 10 days that where your Indian friends were with you.
Mm.
And did you notice different treatment or any different kind of incidents happen when you're on your own than when you're with – somebody who may speak one of the local languages or at least looks like the local folk?
That's an interesting question. When I was on my own, obviously, I don't speak Hindi.
Okay.
So it was a little bit difficult. The maid spoke a little bit of English.
Mm-hmm.
The driver, who kept telling me his English was very good, but it wasn't. But you can get by because most of the Indians will speak a bit of English.
Yep.
You know, shopkeepers will all speak English a little bit. And Indians themselves are very, very nice, and they will go out their way to help you.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a tourist, okay, they want to make money from you one way or another.
Yep.
If you're buying something, they will want more money than you're willing to pay. But at the end of the day, they're trying to make a living. And I found them very nice, very helpful. I never had a problem.
All right. I'm going to leave you with a question before you pop your song on, because we have Chris, who has written in, who wants to know, would you prefer to live in India than here in Australia, or perhaps in any other country? And so we're going to let you ponder the question and then play some music.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Mic's on. There
we
go.
We're on.
And we are on air. And I'm Barb, and that was, of course, Leo. And we're talking with Hugh today, who's normally a presenter here on Orange Ribbon. But because he's just gotten home from 6 months of fabulous-sounding travel throughout India, we thought we'd pop him into the guest chair today and talk to him a bit about those cross-cultural experiences. Now, you did a bit of traveling.
Yes.
You were in Mumbai and Goa, as we've mentioned. But you also went to Rajasthan as a real tourist.
Yeah, I was a tourist. A real tourist.
A real tourist, not just this pretend kind of tourist you're at. So what did you do? What's there to do in Rajasthan?
Rajasthan, I went there by accident, actually, because...
you got lost?
Yeah, I took the wrong turn. No. The person who was the tour leader is the person I met in India. And he invited me to go on this tour. So... I didn't start the tour with everyone. I got a flight from Delhi to Udaipur in Rajasthan, and then joined them there. And we visited 4 or 5 different places in Rajasthan. So we're traveling in a coach. There was 13 of us.
Okay. All Westerners?
All Westerners, yes. Different countries, obviously, but all Westerners.
But not the kind of thing that Indians from the south are going to pop up to the north to
no,
do?
No. And it was really, really nice. I really enjoyed Rajasthan and seeing all these little villages and towns. It was an uplifting experience. We went to a village. Now, I think it was called Pushkar. I'm not sure. But I think it was Pushkar.
Anyway, it was a village.
this village, we stayed in a hotel just outside the village, and it was an old fort, going back to the British rule.
Okay.
An old fort made into a hotel, so it was absolutely beautiful, and it was like walking back in time. Obviously, it's been modernized a little bit, you know, modern bathrooms and everything, but it still had that old feeling, and it was really, really nice. We went on a walking tour of the village, which was supposed to be for half an hour. We actually spent 2 to 2.5 hours in this village, because the whole village came out to meet us. And a girl who was in a wheelchair wanted us to go to her house and see her house, which was 2 rooms. And there was 13 of us and half a village in this house. And 2 of the girls on the tour were taken into a different house and were given saris to try on. And we were actually given presents of silver rings.
Wow.
Now, this is people who live in a village in Rajasthan who don't have much money.
Indeed.
But these people just wanted to speak to us. They were just so happy that we were there and seeing how they live and talking to them. Two young boys, there would be about 12, sitting on a wall, called me across and said, they separated and said, sit here with us. And they wanted to speak English.
Okay.
And it was so nice. It was absolutely beautiful. And the local school teacher came out and invited us with 3 of his friends to go and visit the temple, which was like a 10-minute walk out of the village. And you know something, I'd seen so many temples in India, I thought, not another temple. But then I thought about it and I thought, at least they're being nice and they want, they're proud. They're very proud of their temple. So we all went and looked and saw it. And then afterwards, they explained everything. And then they said, thank you very much, shook her hand and went away. So, you know, when you meet people like this, as I said, you never feel you're going to come to any harm. You feel safe because the people are so nice. And no one asked us for money. The children wanted pens from us.
But did you have any to give?
Yeah, I gave 2 away. And I got into trouble because we ended up with about 100 kids all shouting for pens. But it was really nice, really, really nice.
One of the things you mentioned is that you were traveling with this guy you've met. And how openly could one travel as 2 men in India?
I suppose you have to be careful. But Indian men hold hands when they're walking along. If there's 2 guys who are very good friends, they'll hold hands or hold fingers or mm-hmm. something, and that's quite natural. And they're not gay or anything. Mm-hmm. It's just something that they do. So, you know, if two guys were holding hands, they're not going to question it.
Yep.
Unless you're a Westerner. They'll question it
as
then.
As you because, are, Hugh.
Yes, because then they know that it's not your custom to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But two Indians would get away with it. But, oh, we've got more music coming up. And I'm supposed to be playing the music, am I?
That's all right, Hugh.
This song, I picked this next song, actually, because the person I met in India really liked this song.
So this is for him.
Yes.
Joy 94.9.
You're on at Joy 94.9, Orange Ribbon, the last 5 minutes with your hosts, Leo and Barb. Our guest today has been Hugh. Now, Hugh, your Indian travels sound absolutely amazing. And we're going to have a special show because there's still so much more that we haven't covered yet. But quickly, tell us about the gay scene in Delhi.
Delhi? It's very good, actually. The thing about Delhi, though, you have to have an invite for some of the parties, as they're called. I suppose it's for security and also to make sure that it's the right people that go. So you've actually got to go onto a website and register with the person who's organizing the party. And they send you a message on your phone inviting you to that party. So if it's on a Saturday night, you must have the message on your phone or you can't get in. There are some venues where you can just rock up to the door, pay your 800 rupees, like on a Tuesday night, there's one. And then they'll give you tickets. And when you go into the venue, you can spend those tickets on drinks. But again, the vet who goes in and out, you know, it's not just anybody that can rock up to the door.
And is this true all over India or was this just in Delhi?
I know it happens in Delhi and I know it happens in Mumbai.
Mm-hmm.
They have similar parties there and you have to register and you have to have an invite on your phone. In Bangalore, I would imagine they do advertise them similar, so I would mm-hmm. imagine you need that as well.
Yeah, so is there a real sort of tight-knit gay community in India because of the pressure of family and society?
A lot of the people I met have actually come out.
Okay.
They're not in the closet.
Yep.
Including
the guy you met?
No.
Right. That makes it more difficult, doesn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yes, yes. But he's in Delhi and his family are hundreds of kilometers away. So
oh, that makes life
matter.
Easier.
Yes. But a lot of them aren't out. So, and something really bad actually happened in Bangalore. A TV station in Bangalore got a hold of footage of people and went into the website and actually showed you photographs of guys on air.
Wow.
Live news program.
Yeah, and sounds like the 60s and the 50s.
It was terrible. It was really, really bad. But they were made to apologize and pay a fine eventually, which
that
was
that
good.
Solves the lives of those people
That's
that
right.
have been destroyed.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the scene in India is as big as it is here.
Okay. Yep.
But I would say more locked away behind doors.
Mm-hmm.
And a bar won't be a gay bar for 7 days a week. It'll be one day a week.
Okay.
You know, and that's it, that one night.
Yep, yep. Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. Before we go to the news, we have one final bit of unfinished business here because we have listener Chris hanging on the edge of his or her seat, wondering where you would prefer to live. Now that you've tasted India, would you prefer to live there? Would you want to be here in Australia or would you want to be in some other place?
At the moment, I would like to be in India.
At the moment, he wants to be in India. So there you go, Chris. All of the stories of love and travel and tourism. Hugh wants to be in India. Well,
thank you so much, Hugh, for joining us on Orange Ribbon this afternoon. A big thanks to Barb as well.
Thank you, Leo.
That was our show for another week. It's been a great show.
Yeah. I just wanted to say hello to Jay.
Hi, Jay.
Hi, Jay.
No, Orange Woman will be back again same time next week, 5 o'clock every Saturday afternoon with more insights into our GLBTIQ community here in Australia and around the world. From myself, Leo, Barb and Hugh, and as well as Mark, who's a bit under the weather today. Have a great week. And coming up next is the news headlines with Byron. And after that is One-on-One with Vasco. Have a great week, everyone.
Get well soon, Mark.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.